This is the Adam Gold Show.
We've talked about Rod Brind'Amour earlier. We talked to Lavelle Moten yesterday. You just heard him. Rod Brind'Amour was on the show yesterday as well. You just heard Lavelle right there. I would vote for those two guys as our North Carolina Senators. Be a little male heavy. We need some female representation. But I'm just saying, we could do a lot. Those two dudes, I would trust to learn what's going on with politics and make them better. Love Lavelle Moten and Rod Brind'Amour. Two of the finest people in our area. Not far down the list of fine people in our area will you find Chip Patterson. I don't know how far it is. You could be third behind Vell and Rod Brind'Amour of great people in Raleigh, North Carolina. You might be like fourth and fifth. There's probably a few other folks we'd want to squeeze in there. But joining us now from CBS Sports is my good friend Chip Patterson. Chip, what's going on, dude?
But definitely not. You can't run me, right? Like, I just, there's no way. I mean, you look at some of those political commercials.
Sure.
You know, they're calling out your record from 2002. They're showing you, like,
what you said and did,
like, 10, 15 years ago. I think that I'm better. I'm better as somebody to support a good cause. Don't let me be the face of it, because I wouldn't want to sully a good cause with whatever my past might be able to.
I think we're moving there was a time, but I think we're a better people if we don't go find the worst thing that anyone ever did and say, all right, this is the thing that we're going to judge whether or not this is a good person on. I think we're moving in a direction past that, maybe slowly, maybe at a glacial pace, but yes. All right, question. In your fantasy football league, do you have a punishment for the last place finisher, or is it just rewards for the victors?
Oh, we've got promotion and relegation.
No way.
Yeah. We've got a
next level.
And so I think it's like 14 in the A league and 6 in the B league. And it's 2 up, 2 down every single year. We're like into the regular season. If you're last place, you go down. And then if you finish, like, you know, the consolation ladder,
right?
If you finish last place in the consolation ladder, then you end up going down. So really, if you're in the bottom 3 or bottom 4, you are in jeopardy. And this is a fantasy football league that dates back to like high school classrooms at Broughton, where we would just be like going in during our lunch to set our lineups. It's a league that's been going for more than 20 years, and it has gotten big. It has grown. We've expanded. We've contracted. And right now we have promotion and relegation.
That's amazing.
I hope I can say it's called the Society of Spavel.
Okay.
I don't know if that's radio friendly or not, but that's the name of the league.
Well, I don't know what it means, so we won't investigate further. And then but does the loser of the second division, the B division, do they have to do anything specific, or is there no punishment beyond you're still in the B division?
Yeah, no punishment beyond just being in that B division, and a lot of like in person drafts and in person watch parties. So I mean, if the embarrassment that you have as being not only in the B division, but just being the doormat of the B division,
sure.
A league where, because there's only 6 teams, it is impossible not to at least have some good players. So you have really, really fallen short if you're finished in last place in the B division.
All right. So I don't know if you heard the story we were discussing earlier about the guy whose fantasy football league punishment was he had to go play in a U.S. Open qualifier, which is amazing, right? So if you haven't heard this story, the guy goes out there and he shoots – shoots 112. This is my favorite quote from it. He says, I'm pretty happy with the 4 pars for sure. The walking got to me. I'm more of a cart guy myself.
Blaine, yes.
So the question I have for you, Chip Patterson, how confident would you be that you could break 112 at a U.S. Open qualifying?
Not confident at all. I mean, because you've got to count all the strokes.
I know.
Right?
I appreciate the honesty. I said this too. Yeah.
No, even when my game is tight, across 18 holes, I'm going to nuke minimum 1 hole. And the way that we're keeping score, what do we always just say, like, triple's the highest that you're going to get?
Exactly. So yeah,
exactly. Like, yeah. I always, like, whenever we're talking about, like, what you shoot, like, what your scores are, I always know in the back of my mind that this is what I shoot based on the friendly competition that I have with other people under the guise of these rules that when I'm just like totally off the radar, I can just like, you know, pick it up, take a triple and be able to keep it moving. If you actually had to count every single stroke, I mean, there would be There would be at least one double-digit number on that card. So I do not think I could break 112.
I've been playing decently right now, and you're right. I do think I will. I don't think I'll give myself a 9 on a par 5, but I think I've given myself an 8 on a 4. I think I'll even take a quad, especially when I'm playing well and I know that it's not going to get away from me. So I would not be confident at all that I could break 100 at a U.S. Open qualifying, playing all my, counting all my strokes. And again, not rolling the ball over in the fairway from a thin part of grass to a nice lush grass. You know what I mean? Like, there's none of that. So you can't do that. Right now, I'm kind of feeling myself. I think I could beat 112. I really do. I think I could shoot like a 106 out there.
But that's, I mean, I think that I would be able to handle the moment because I like some of my most pressure packed golf that I've ever played. You know, I think that I've experienced something where I would be able to go out there. Like when you're playing Pinehurst number 2 with CBS Sports golf writer Kyle Porter and a bunch of other of like the golf Illuminati,
sure.
And it's Pinehurst number 2, like you are a little bit tense. You got to figure out a way to channel something. Like when you are paired up with somebody at one of these golf tournaments, it can get a little, I mean, hey, remember in the way back days when we used to play golf at an ACC football kickoff?
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden you get in there with a Paul Johnson, you know, you get in there with somebody that you're trying to, you know, not impress,
yeah,
but
yes.
You certainly
but
don't
just
want to
not embarrass yourself. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was where I at least got the mental edge. Where playing in a U.S. Open qualifier would not be what would unravel me. It would be having to count all the strokes when I inevitably go out there and put up an 11.
Chip Patterson joining us from CBS Sports. Anyway, kudos to those guys. I think that's an amazing punishment to have to endure for losing your fantasy football league. And obviously, what would have been a great story if he somehow had played much better and advanced. All right. Divisions in college football. What's going to happen, and is this going to affect every conference? We've been talking specifically about the ACC. The NCAA seems to be relaxing their rules on what you need to have a conference championship, allowing teams to go divisionless if they want. Is everybody going to go divisionless, or is just this just a thing that the ACC is specifically keen on?
I think that it is more the idea that, especially like with some of the expanded leagues, like the SEC does not want to, in its expanded 16-team league, be out there with 2 8-team divisions. And so you had to sort of deregulate the idea that you have to have 2 divisions, each division has to have a champion, and that's how you go and hold your conference championship game to be able to start to look at the future. And it's, you know, very possible, because I'm just not really ruling anything out these days, that there are other conferences that are going to end up, you know, getting to 16 teams. You know, that we could see in this, you know, down the line reorganization of the high level of college athletics. There could be other teams that join other schools that join the ACC, other schools that join the Big 12, the Pac-12. And so number one is just kind of, you know, taking out rules that really might be a hindrance towards moving the sport forward. Now, here's why I think it's going to happen in the ACC. It's not because of competitive balance. And I really don't think it's going to be as much about, you know, making sure that we get teams playing each other more often. You know, like what's our classic example is State and Duke, right?
Yep.
Separated by just a short drive, but they only see each other like once every 8 to 12 years. And if you take out divisions and if you create the opportunity for every single school to see another ACC member school more often, then we don't have those kind of breaks. We don't need a non-conference game between North Carolina and Wake Forest. But I think it's about TV, just like everything. I think that when you get into these cycles of division play, sometimes some matchups become stale from really selling them to advertisers, selling them to the college football fan. And I think that the TV partners are very interested in being able to create some flexibility and being able to create a little bit more a movement within that, so you can have more unique matchups. It won't be so stale. And I think that it's really that idea of how are we marketing ACC football on a national level. You've got to be able to have a little bit more flexibility than divisions allow you. So, like, yes, there are good things for fans and that you'll be able to see more of the ACC over a 4 to 8 year period. And yes, there are obviously some advantages for those schools in the ACC Atlantic that have felt like they've been beating their heads against Florida State and Clemson, you know, over the expanded time of having division play in the ACC. But I think that the reason it's going to go through is because some of the division rivalries have not been really as spicy from a rivalry perspective. And I'm not picking on Duke, but Duke football is not a big national brand. And I think that you just would like to know from a TV provider that you're just not going to have to sell Duke, Georgia Tech every year, right? That there's going to be some rotation that's going to make it so that you get some more mixed up matchups.
Chip Patterson joining us from CBS Sports. And sorry if you answered this in there, that it was a good answer and I may have missed it, because sometimes when I'm filling in radio, I got to remember what I'm doing and glance at other notes. Do you think that every conference is going divisionless?
Yes, I do think that every conference will be divisionless, but I want to put a little star on that, because whether it's pods or it might be four divisions that aren't called divisions.
Gotcha.
It might be these are the groups. This is the pod system. I think that there has to be grouping from a logistics standpoint, and so I think that we're just not going to call them divisions. But I do think that just for scheduling purposes, you will be having some kind of grouping of the conferences all across the board moving forward.
Gotcha. Chip Patterson joining us from CBS Sports. And then everybody always can see the good reasons. When you want to change, like the example you brought up, yay, State and Duke are going to play more often. That's definitely a good thing. You mentioned some other good things. Do you personally, or have you read of any other people sending up warnings or talking about any reason why this would be a bad thing to get rid of divisions? Is there something that we're not seeing that as soon as they go away, we'll be like, oh, that was kind of a good thing that we took for granted?
Oh, 100%. It is smart to go to a format that allows more flexibility. But I want to mention this one aspect, and it's going to get looked over because, again, the main reason I think that we're going to go to divisionless play has to do with television. Television's the reason why the multi-million-dollar checks get cut to the ACC and distributed to the schools every year. So it's probably just going to get thrown by the wayside like a lot of things. But I think there is an inherent value to winning a championship. And I think that there is being a Atlantic Division champion means something.
Gotcha.
Wake Forest football did not win an ACC championship, but it won an Atlantic Division championship. And when Wake Forest clinched the Atlantic Division championship, it was a moment for Wake Forest football, for Wake Forest alumni. Pitt coach Pat Narduzzi has said, I don't think that we win this ACC championship if we don't win the ACC Coastal Division championship in 2018. And that the idea of being a champion and the idea of sort of selling that to 18 to 22-year-olds who you're trying to get to buy in to this program and buy into what you can accomplish, that – I'm not trying to go total participation trophy on this, but if we just line them up 1 through 14, pick the top two, tell them to go play, then, and this is actually a quote from Narduzzi, so I want to make sure I cite him here. He said, you've got one champion and you've got 13 losers. And I think that just within the context of trying to build up a program, within the context of trying to have a sense of accomplishment, title rings, banners, whatever you want to call it. I do personally, this is just my personal opinion. I like the idea of having divisions because you've got a more manageable championship that can be attained.
No, that's a perfect answer. It's exactly what I was looking for. It's what's something that we're going to miss? And I think you're exactly right. Especially if you're in the Coastal Division, you always had something to strive for. But yes, Chip Patterson joining us from CBS Sports. On the other side, we've had a lot of the coaches have been more towards the Dabo Swinney end of the spectrum when they chime in on their comments on NIL. Now Mike Bray comes into the fold, and he's kind of the other end of the spectrum. We'll see where Chip Patterson currently stands or where he thinks coaches should be standing on that spectrum, talking NIL next on the Adam Gold Show. Chip Patterson joining us, talking, whatever we want to talk. We might talk some Canes. Chip, have you been to a Canes playoff game? Actually, that's probably a silly question because I know what your household is like right now. Two young kids. I'm guessing there has not been a lot of Canes playoff games in your agenda.
Yeah, I had to send the text that the Dr. Dean threw out the invite for game one.
Nice.
And I had to be like, man, 7 p.m. puck drops when I got a postpartum wife and two kids under two. I was like, I got to be here through bedtime, if we catch an afternoon puck drop, maybe I can make something happen. But like even right now, I'm sort of coming downstairs from work upstairs and getting both boys down about like, you know, the 12 to 10 minute mark of the first period. So
sure.
Being able to make it out to PNC Arena for a 7 p.m. puck drop just ain't happening at this point.
Well, it is cool that your second son made it into the world in time to see the Canes win a Stanley Cup. He'll never forget that. A lot of coaches, I'm just picking Dabo Swinney and kind of picking on him, you know, have been bemoaning everything that's going on with NIL, how it's changing things, transfer portal, all that stuff, how it's bad for the game. And I'm not saying that they don't have some valid points. Yesterday is when I came across it, Mike Bray kind of went in another direction. He didn't specifically say that he likes NIL or likes the transfer portal, but I'll read the quote directly from him. I told a lot of young coaches when we were on the road in April, I said, we got to stop complaining. Like, this is the world we're in. Last time I checked, you make pretty good money, so everybody should shut up and adjust. You know, that's just the world we're in now. And, you know, I'm not in it as long as the Josh Pastors and some of these young guys. So good luck to y'all. I'll be back in 5 years to see what's up. Just remember, man, we've had it pretty good here, and it's a great job. It's high risk, high reward, but we all know what we signed up for. I'm not going to say it's not a black or white world where one of these guys is right and one of these guys is wrong, but I'll just give you the blanket, generic, bad question for sports radio. What's your reaction to Mike Bray's comments on name, image, and likeness?
We don't have high level men's basketball coaches that started as high school teachers anymore. Mike Bray was at DeMatha.
Yeah.
You know, like he was a history teacher and a basketball coach. And like to be where he's at now, to be at Notre Dame for as long as he has, to see his own salary continue to go up as revenues have continued to grow up, like that is a man who really did get into this for the love of coaching.
Yeah.
Who really did, you know, want to be able to help young people better themselves, you know, on the court and elsewhere. And that's where he's like, are you kidding me with what we're getting paid now? Like I was doing this for so much less, for pennies compared to what we're making. And you know, with the modern college basketball coach, I feel like we don't have a lot of those history teachers that end up being the head basketball coach.
Your point about being the teacher is like spot on. He's like, oh, you're mad because somebody transferred? Like, let's go back to the old, like, you want to teach three classes too? Like before basketball practice? Like, I want to teach at your college? Like, would you like for that to be part of your job? Like, come on. Like, this is hard. But like, yeah, you are getting paid a lot. So, and I'll never not love Mike Bray, and he's got to be the only person who has coached a Division I or certainly an ACC game, basketball game in gym shorts. I know it was during COVID, but he was in the Dean Dome in gym shorts, and I love Mike Bray for that. What is the latest news? It feels like the NIL is people rushing to the NCAA and saying, hey, we gotta tighten some things up. Do you expect anything to change between now and like the start of football season? Or is it continuing to be a schools do what they think they can and dare somebody to stop them?
Any change won't be because of the NCAA. Any change will be from the IRS. The way that some of these collectives have been organized and their financials, like if they are nonprofits and if there is, I'm so uneducated on when it comes to these, you know, the financial side of it or the tax implications. And the same thing goes when people talk about, well, what about the tax implications of, paying revenue to student athletes, to athletes? Like I don't have the best research. I don't have the best brain to be able to handle all that. But my understanding is that it is possible that the IRS could come back and be like, wait. You're calling yourself a nonprofit, but look at all this money, you know, like look at these millions of dollars and look what's the way that it's being applied, the way that it's being spent, you know, how much charitable work is actually being done. Any kind of changes I think would only come from there. Now, in terms of the NCAA and its sternly worded letter, I read it at its, at its worst, it was sort of performance or like theater. But you know, at its best, they are earnestly hearing from coaches, they are hearing from some fans, and they are hearing from college administrators that are frustrated and that are confused and that feel like the guidelines that were initially laid out when name, image, and likeness was pushed through very, very quickly, I might add, that they feel like they aren't being enforced. And so it had the sense of bureaucracy where it's like, the constituents are complaining. What are we going to do? We're going to form a committee. What's the committee going to do? It's going to make a task force. What's the task force going to do? They're going to do a report. And that's kind of what I think is going to happen here. Like, I don't expect there to be a widespread crackdown of all of the name, image, and likeness that we're hearing all across the board. There could be a program or a couple of programs that get caught up in a high profile case. But I just think that getting the genie back in the bottle on this one, it's going to be far too difficult. From my understanding, there could be, you know, legal implications in terms of trying to get in there and crack down on some of these collectives. And so the NCAA itself, I do not think is going to change in a great way the way that name, image, and likeness is being done all across of, you know, college football, for example, before the start of the college football season. But it is possible that some combination of the NCAA, the IRS, the federal government, like it could be that there are enough external pressures that things at least get to a place where if you're freaking out, you feel like you understand the rules or you feel like you understand the landscape. And if you are, you know, very much capitalizing on this name, image, and likeness, you still are able to have those same opportunities as an athlete. And as a school, you're still able to set up your athletes to have those opportunities.
Chip Patterson joining us from CBS Sports. I love when you said, like, yes, I read the NCAA's sternly worded letter. The only time somebody used the phrase, it's kind of like bless their heart. Like, sternly worded letter, like, means that you think it was, like, full of crap and the person didn't do enough. Like, oh, yes, I did see they wrote a sternly worded letter. Like, you're giving them credit, but you're really not. Anytime you see the phrase sternly worded letter, you're actually calling the person out, not giving them credit for their stern choice of words.
And they have to be able to say that. Like, when the coaches are like, what are you going to do? Now at least
sternly
the NCAA
worded
can say,
letter.
We wrote a letter.
Chip Patterson from CBS Sports. Appreciate the time. Get back to dad life. Change some diapers. And maybe get your golf game in shape so that you can break 112 at a U.S. Open qualifier at some point. We'll talk to you
soon,
my
man. Sounds good. Y'all be well.
It is halfway through the show, 90 minutes in. We got 90 minutes left. I'm early to make up for yesterday's late halftime. Do I get credit for that?
No, you don't.
Do I need to hit it right on the head every time?
I mean, I would prefer that.
Dennis, you sound actually mad with me, man. I'm sorry. I'll try to get closer to 130 next time. But for now, can we just do halftime? The looks that I'm getting from I don't need this. I'm a fill-in guy, okay? I'm doing my best. I don't nail the clock. I'm sorry. What's up at Halftime Entertainment today? Are you going to go mad at Halftime Entertainment the
yes,
whole time?
Angry,
you stay mad?
My Halftime Entertainment is me ranting.
Pouty Halftime Entertainment.
It's me ranting on Hayes Permar. We got to give, first of all, a congratulations to former Carolina Hurricane great Patrick Marleau, who has announced his retirement.
Yeah.
The long career.
Does he get his jersey in the rafters at PNC?
I think so. Well, I don't know. That's going to be kind of controversial because he wore number 12 throughout his career. That's Eric Stahl's number. We're going to have two 12s in the rafters.
Everything that Marleau did for the franchise, though.
Well, here's the thing. You know what he did do for the franchise, honestly?
We flipped him for somebody good?
Well, here's the thing. So Canes basically bought a first-round pick. Yeah,
for those who don't know, Patrick Marleau never actually played for the Carolina Hurricanes, but
yes,
he was merely their – They owned his rights at one point, but he was merely a transaction. So
yes,
we jokingly referred to him as Hurricanes great Patrick Marleau. Yeah, what did he turn into?
Well, the pick that they acquired when they took on Patrick Marleau's contract and bought him out, Seth Jarvis.
Wow.
Yes, that was the first-round pick from Toronto that they got, Seth Jarvis.
Now he truly is
Yes,
Cane's legend,
exactly.
Patrick Marleau.
He is Cane's legend, Patrick Marleau now.
I mean, that's at least a hockey assist to the drafting of Seth Jarvis, right?
Exactly.
You got to give the guy some credit. Marleau, you will never be forgotten. Caniacs would love you. Does anybody actually have a Patrick Marleau Cane's jersey?
I want one.
There's got to be one out there.
I want a Patrick Marleau Whalers jersey.
They would crush. Like, if they did a limited series, like, all right, we're going to sell 25 Cane's. I don't know how. I don't know who you have to check with. Like, yeah. I'm sure we couldn't just make a Canes Ovechkin jersey and sell it in our store. I mean, not. No. I wouldn't want to. But, like, I'm sure we couldn't make another player and sell it as an officially licensed Canes product. But, like, in this case, I feel like if you got with the player and got with the league, you're like, hey, give us an exception. Let us print 25 official Canes Patrick Marleau jerseys. Sell them for three times the cost.
Oh, yeah.
Those things would go like hotcakes.
Yes.
Make it happen. Canes legend Patrick Marleau.
I mean, now that he's retired, you might be able to do something like that.
Yes.
Now that he's retired.
We'll see. But I'm sure the NHL would want to be in on it and get a cut. Whatever. I want a Marleau Canes jersey.
As do I. Or at least, you know, can I get a jersey?
I'll take that.
Gosh, can I get a jersey at least? But nevertheless, the trade that and the buyout subsequently of Patrick Marleau is the first round pick that came with them, Seth Jarvis.
Excellent.
It's a great career, Patrick Marleau.
What do Seth Jarvis and David Tepper have in common?
I don't know.
Brass balls. David Tepper keeps his on his desk.
Billiard balls.
Yeah. Seth Jarvis has a pair.
Yes.
Figuratively and literally.
Yeah, figuratively.
It keeps getting hit in them.
So, also the Canadiens. So, congratulations, the Montreal Canadiens. You actually won something.
Woo! What'd they win?
They won the draft lottery.
I like to think of, like, what if the Canes call the Canadiens, like, hey, we want to make a trade. Like, how quickly do they hang up? Like, no way. No
I think
way.
That number's blocked.
We don't mess with you guys. You guys are definitely going to screw us. No way doing a trade with you.
I think the number's blocked.
Yeah, they don't talk to us.
In all opinions.
Congratulations on the number one pick. Don't blow it.
They probably will. How long before the Canes sign him to an offer sheet?
The Canes are already offer sheeted their number one pick. Yes. Will the number one pick be better than Seth Jarvis?
I don't know.
We'll see.
But either way, offer sheet. So the NFL is officially releasing their schedule for this upcoming season tomorrow. They sent a release out saying a week ago saying, hey, in 1 week we're going to release the schedule. Even though it was probably already made.
A release about a release.
Yes, exactly. Release about a release. It was probably already made, but I think when Tom Brady announced that he's actually not going to retire, they probably tore it up and completely redid.
Yes, yes. New schedule. New schedule.
New schedule. Yes, just burn the old one. Redo this
100%.
One. So on the list of NFL games you won't watch this season, as the NFL is continually to tease games.
So they're just throwing out games here. Here's this game is going to happen here. They gave us a Christmas Day game yesterday.
Yeah, they gave us the international games stuff. On the list of NFL games you won't watch this season, the Cowboys will be visiting the Packers in Week 10.
Wait, why won't I watch that game?
Because do you really want to watch that game?
I might watch that game.
Why?
It might be two good teams. I still like the NFL. I have to fight my Sports Channel 8 brethren on that. They're like, the Panthers stink. Nobody watches the NFL anymore. I'm like, nah, I still like the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, they recognize that people still do, but the joke is that they don't want to watch it anymore.
Well, here's the thing.
I would watch Cowboys-Packers. Why are we not watching this
they're
game?
They're already touting, Mike McCarthy going back to Green Bay. They've already started the storyline.
This is a possible number one seed in the playoffs on the line here. Come on.
Is it, though?
Yeah. I know Dak Prescott's been hurt half the season, but he's back 90%. He's not fully healthy. He's playing today. I know Aaron Rodgers said something stupid last week, but I still enjoy watching him play. Yeah, I'm watching this game week 10.
I also wonder as well is where are we going to be in the conversation about is Aaron Rodgers retiring? Is he going to be gone after this season? Oh, blah, 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 blah. I wonder where we're going to be in that conversation.
Is he still with the Packers?
Yeah.
Okay. Every quarterback moved this year. So like you have to stop and be like, wait a minute, where is he again? And Tom Brady? Still unretired, correct? Yes.
Okay. As far as I know. Is it retirement when you actually don't miss a practice, a game, or a mini camp, or really any offseason workout?
Yeah, it's retirement because he signed a $300 million contract to do something afterwards. So, yes.
I want to get more into that. So, again, a 10-year, $375 million deal from Fox for Tom Brady.
I feel like the guy
when he retires.
The guy in The Music Man who yells, but he doesn't know the territory. I feel like being like, but we don't even know if he's good at it.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Have you ever turned to watch an NFL game and be like, you know what? Who's the commentary team?
I mean, I don't.
Those guys, I'm tuning in because of the commentary team, not because of the guys playing, but because of the broadcast team. No one that I know does that.
No, I don't think it's a strong pull. We may take it for granted our enjoyment of a game based on the broadcast team. Like, I recognize a good one versus a bad one, but you're right. Like, we've seen the Panthers, like, except for like 1 year after the Super Bowl year when, you know, Cam Newton was lightning, we get the like B, C, and D team game callers all the time, right? So like I'm used to those guys, but I'm still watching the game if it's my team playing. So yes, if it's a good Monday night matchup, you know, if it's Packers, Cowboys, I'm watching it just because it's Cowboys, Packers, not because of the announcing team. But yeah, no, I don't know. I think the bigger question is, do we even know? How do we know if he's good?
Yeah.
We don't.
Who knows?
Ridiculous.
All I know is this is going to be, it's all for sponsorship dollars. That's really all it is. So Fox can throw Brady and be like, to any sponsor, be like, hey, Brady's going to be doing these games, all this, blah, 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 blah. And like, you can endorse, you know, use him as part of like the endorsement.
What if they'll make him come on? I'm sure they'll make him come on studio shows and stuff.
Yeah, who knows what they'll do. Here, Tony Romo makes $18 million a year. I wonder how he feels.
Ooh, only half? I mean, is that the new going to be the new market? Are
quarterbacks setting the broadcast
that, but that
market?
That does illustrate the ridiculousness of it. I think people go a little gaga for Romo, but people are like, oh, my God, he's awesome. And he obviously was a well-known quarterback. And Tom Brady's getting twice that before he even does the job? Ridiculous. What's our final one?
All right, we have some more.
I knew it was coming. I thought we were going to one specifically.
Oh, no, this is exactly where we're going.
Okay. I knew it was coming.
PLL draft.
When you tagged me in a tweet yesterday. Like I said, I've filled in the show enough times to know how things work. What was it yesterday where I was like, this? The return of Jack Tracer or something?
Oh, Jack Ryan.
Jack Ryan. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like,
this smells like a Dennis has an opinion he wants to chime in on, which I'm totally fine with. Your show and this segment is, your segment. But when I got tagged yesterday in the PLL, is it Premier Lacrosse League?
That's correct.
Of something about their draft, I was like, this is going to be in halftime entertainment tomorrow. All right, what happened in the PLL draft?
Okay.
Who did the Archers get?
They got Matt Moore from Virginia, number 4 overall. Great pick.
Yay. Yeah,
for your guy, Will Manny.
Yeah.
It's a great pick for him because Will Manny's just going to be catching and shooting all day.
Is Will Manny like LeBron? Does he play GM? Like, did he default
no,
make
no,
the pick?
No, he does not. No, he does not all play right, GM.
They need to be letting him make the picks.
Well, he probably would have chosen Matt. He probably would have chosen Matt Moore.
Who was the number 1 overall?
Logan Wisnowskis of Maryland.
Give me some more. Do you have the whole list?
I can pull it up.
I want some more just lacrosse names. Logan Wisnowskis was okay, but I need some just more very lacrosse names from the Premier League draft.
Okay.
I feel like the college ranks would probably have even better ones, but what are some from this?
Okay, so Logan Wisnowskis was taken number 1 overall. Number 2 overall, actually, out of UNC, was Chris Gray.
Man, that's not a good lacrosse name.
Okay, number 3 out of Notre Dame, Arden Cohen.
Arden, A-R-D-E-N.
Yes.
That's pretty lacrosse-y, Arden.
Yeah,
we can do better, but that's laxy.
Then Matt Moore, Kobe Smith.
Kobe Smith is
out of Towson.
There. We need a better name. He's definitely from Towson. Kobe is good. We need a better last name. Give me some more.
We got Brett Kennedy, Roman Puglisi.
Roman Puglisi. None of these are just like slam dunk home run winners, though. Give me some more.
Zach Geddes.
Nah.
Oh, here you go. From High Point, Asher Nolting.
There we go. That's a lacrosse name. Asher Nolting. That guy should have been the number 1 pick.
Also, here's another one. Number 15 overall, Wheaton Jacobowitz.
Wheaton Jacobowitz, yes.
Jacobowitz, yep.
Wheaton Jacobowitz. And what was the other one?
Asher Nolting.
Asher Nolting. Those should have gone 1-2. They are the lacrosse players in that draft.
Third pick should have been Jonathan Donville.
Jonathan Donville, okay, but not as strong as Asher and Wheaton. Those are my guys. That's who I'm drafting.
Also picked 19th overall, Nekai Montgomery from Duke.
That's not bad, not bad.
Here, Max Wayne.
Asher and Wheaton. Max Wayne is solid.
Oh, Keegan Conn.
Yeah, Keegan Conn. He rattles your teeth. He's a defender. Keegan Conn.
And Mitch Bartolo.
I don't know about Mitch Bartolo.
And what about Owen McElroy?
Owen McElroy, more football-y.
Jackson Reed.
Jackson Reed, yeah, that's lacrosse-y.
There
you
go.
All right.
There's your PLL update.
Entertainment.
This is the Adam Gold Show.